When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Here's the f***ing money, head!
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
Just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas on the board for the moment. And when Matt Byrne gets here, Greg will move into his mic spot where he's supposed to be on Monday morning. SP Futures down a quarter. Yes, a whole quarter. And NASDAQ Futures down 7 as we head into this kind of crazed week with a Democratic convention here in Chicago. And as a concerned citizen of Chicago, of course, Greg, it frustrates the living bejesus out of me, but just saying, you know, I'm not...
Which part is the most frustrating? Traffic.
No, you know, actually, it comes down to, is every politician that I've ever cared to look at in the city when I became observant as a, you know, I got out of my 20s and 30s, all I cared about was playing softball and going to the bar.
We should get back into that.
No kidding. Absolutely no kidding. I'd do that in a second. Get me back out there 4 nights a week. In good shape. I'd do that in a second. But the idea that no matter how broke we are, to never be able to give anybody any dough, whatever these bleeps want to do, they always manage to find the money. And the you know, the distribution of resources of the city and state is all in their meager minds. And I'm not saying they're dumb people. They sure as hell aren't. They wouldn't be where they are. I mean, but when was the last time you saw a Chicago police car doing anything on the expressway other than if, like, it's a murder or something? Even then, they don't do anything. Well, last night I'm driving home from my bros early, and I'll make sure it was daylight when I got home. All of a sudden, I see this Chicago squad car flying down, which is still the Ryan, coming over the bridge, down through Hubbard's Cave. You know the spot where they have it all barreled off to go to the...
construction site.
Well, to make sure nobody goes in the lane that normally would be the express lane. The guy flies through there. I didn't even think he could get through there. At like 70 miles an hour, the dust he kicks up is like something you wouldn't believe.
Straight out of a movie?
Yeah, guess where he's going. He's going to meet up with the state police guy. Because evidently, unbeknownst to most, the big construction project on the express lanes of the Kennedy, which has had the city absolutely screwed up now for 2 years, and it's going to go another year. People are never working, not never, but rarely working, it seems. No two shifts, no nothing. Everybody's inconvenienced. The whole north side is a disaster every night. Nobody gives a bleep. Now, all of a sudden, now this has been secretly reopened. So now no work's going on it for the convention, because so for delegates and the real people, you back and forth to O'Hare, but especially becomes an express lane.
So, well, it would be worse if they didn't do that. So,
well, this guy joins up with the state police guy. There's no crime here. There's no nothing. After endangering all those lives going a million miles an hour next to people that are going 30 or stopped almost, they join up, and all of a sudden I see about 8 or 9 buses flying down the thing for the cool guys to make it here without having to go through traffic. Oh, you're in Chicago. You should have to go through traffic to see how pissed off everybody else is all day long. You shouldn't get a free ride.
I don't think so.
Well, I get it. You'd make a perfect politician. See, it's all about my people, all about my guys. And we've got three hotels these goofballs are staying at. Evidently, Biden, Harris, and the Obamas are staying at three different hotels. All three of them have what? Two layers of 10-foot fencing? Same thing with the federal building. Same thing with the Board of Federal Reserve.
The courthouse down the street has some, it looks like Lollapalooza's going on inside there with the gates up.
And the Federal Reserve building, does anyone even go to work there anymore? Why don't they just say to the demonstrators, nobody works here anymore. They're all from home, allegedly.
Put up a sign.
Yeah. Hey, nobody's here. Don't worry about busting this place up. I mean, this whole...
Well, supposedly there's only going to be like 20,000 protesters.
Well, they're making it as hard as they can for the guys. Plus, where are you going to be here? The hotels are all full. Where are you going to stay?
I don't know.
And, you know, I just... Anybody who thinks this is the way things ought to be, I think when you... If you walk down the street...
Maybe 20,000 is just downtown and there's more.
Maybe. But maybe if you walk down the street and every morning somebody snuck out of a building and slapped you upside the head. It happened for like 10 years now. Does that become normal after a while?
Yeah. You get used to anything.
You get used to anything. There you go. Well, I'm not used to this brand of governance. I'm on a Stevenson heading out to Audrey's on Saturday. The thing is backed up to beat the band and four or five idiots are flying down the shoulder at 90 miles an hour. I didn't see...
Well, how many police do you think they need? I think the report is the city has no time off for the...
Right.
And they've got overtime, and so the city's got maybe 10 or 12,000 police officers.
They got 50,000. Not one of them is Anna Stevenson.
Well, they got 50,000 coming in, supposedly, for the...
No, it's like 5,000. Come from other places. Not even that much, I don't think. They got Milwaukee, they've got...
I'm talking about the delegates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, 50,000 delegates.
There's not 50. How are they all going to fit in McCormick Place?
Or 50,000 people coming for...
Right. There's no... These numbers, you can't believe anything these people say. I was there in 96. Every state... Some states have 12 people, some have 20. There's not 50,000. There's a lot of press, there's a lot of...
Maybe that includes all the...
There's a lot of Good Time Charlies. You know, there's a lot of celebrities. But you go there, and all the seats are like going to a Bulls game.
I think, yeah, USA Today said an estimated 50,000 delegates, politicians, and party activists. So everybody.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of hangers-on and so forth, but I mean, there's got to be... Well, how many delegates are there? 400 and some? I mean, I think you have as many delegates as you do senators. Well, I should check that. But I think you have as many delegates as you do senators and reps. I think. I just so people have a clue what's going on with this stuff. And I'm talking about 1996 now, which I happen to go to. Greg, are you back?
What's going on?
I'm saying I think you have as many delegates as you have senators plus reps, don't you? So that'd be 5-something.
And they're saying politicians and other party activists.
Yeah, but the Good Time Charity Losers.
The Good Time Charity Losers. I mean, it's like a work conference.
What I'm saying, in 96, when I went to the... There wasn't any of this kind of security. Hell, it was before 9/11. So it was... I don't even think we had a metal detector to get in there. Anyway, I go with the guys from the CBOE. Well, I was from the CBOE. It was... I was chairman of marketing committee and on the board... I went over with Chuck Henry, who was the president, Bill Florsch, who was the vice chairman, and Duke Chapman, who was the chairman. We drive over together in a cab. We go in, and the people who are the delegates are sitting either on the floor or in some of the lower stands. You know, everybody's got their banner. We actually did a mock convention when I was in college. So, you know, you learn kind of how to do all this stuff, and the states sit there, and people just sit there and listen to this stuff, and they talk amongst each other. And everybody's got their banner, you know. And if you're like Iowa or something, you know, you'll sit there. All of a sudden, some kind of vote will come around, and they'll say, the delegates from the great state of Iowa are yes, yes, you know, I mean, we're Iowa. Then it'd be the great state of Nebraska, yeah. And all those guys are sitting there. All those people are sitting there drinking a beer or something, and I think they're paying for the beer. And then there's all kinds of other people that have seats. But then the main thing is, every lobbyist firm either has a skybox or a tent downstairs. So we walk in, and our the lobbyist firm that SIBO used was, how's this for a name? Patton Boggs and Blow was the name of the firm, and Tommy Boggs was our guy. And Tommy Boggs is the son of Hale Boggs. See Louisiana, Greg?
So he went as a lobbyist for the financial or for...
I'll bet they had 50, 60 companies on the 10 grand a month deal.
Nice.
They had a big staff. Every committee thing, everything was going on out there. If you were in the Greek gyros business, you'd pay those guys to make sure every piece of legislation came through. There was nothing harmful in there for the... you got them on retainer. And then if something came out and said, you know, we're gonna ban X and gyros, these guys would call you up, and then maybe you'd pay them more, and they'd try to hustle up the guys who were writing up the bill and get it out of the bill. So the CBOE basically paid them anything anybody put on there that affected options, rightly or wrongly, we wanted to know about.
I mean, this is only once every 4 years, so...
Yeah, but
it's a work conference for them.
So you go in there, and of course they got the bar set up, and all the greatest whores divorce. And, I mean, a couple of shrimp and drinking a drink. And then all right, enough with these guys. Then we had like three or four other people. I think our law firm here, who the hell were those guys? Schiff Hardin. Yeah, but it was Schiff Hardin. They had a skybox. So we went up to their skybox. You know, it's like going to, you know, essentially a Bulls game. There's the schmoes, like you and me sitting in our seats, the delegates, and then there's the real guys. You know, with all the booze and all the high polluting stuff up in the skyboxes and in the tents. It's exactly like going to a Bulls game.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well,
you want to be one of the people in the skybox and the tents. You want to be one of their schmoes out there. They're dressed kind of like you and I are right now. They're not even suits or anything. Delegates.
You got to put on the show.
Yeah.
Put on...
But the electronics, the amount of... A whole section of seats are out of the place. I mean, the amount of the huge... video boards. I mean, 96. Imagine how much that stuff must have cost. I mean, now it's cheaper.
What do you think they got on the scoreboard there this year? Just hype videos?
Oh, yeah, just videos of the thing. Well, when the skybox we were in was the third level. And this is 96. Who the hell was running? Was it Clinton? It had to be. And it was Clinton's second term, and then Bush was 2008, right? So, but Hillary gave a speech, and we're watching, and the skybox, the first time I was ever, you know, this United
Center. Wasn't it Romney?
No.
Or McCain in 2008?
Yeah, he ran against McCain.
Yeah.
No, 96.
Yeah, 96.
No, who did Clinton run against? It had to be McCain. He ran against Dole one time, right? Was it Dole? Who ran against Dole? Anyway, so you're up there. First time I was ever in the United Center. It kind of just opened, I think, in 96. And so you're so far away, and that the sound coming up from the place was like a half a second delay from the TV. So we're watching, you know, Hillary on the big screen, because you couldn't really see her. It's like watching one hockey player from the third thing. And she gives this long speech and blah, blah, blah. And then we went home, you know. But it's a huge show. But when you walk around the end behind the goal, the amount of, you know, those things you put down, even like at series or something, if you put a bunch of extension cords down, there's like that little thing you put over it, has the yellow marks on it so you don't trip and kill yourself. Well, the size of this one, it covered these cables. It had to be like 4 inches thick. I don't know. They must have been off for the power. But the amount of power goes down to those microphone sets and those video boards is unbelievable. It's probably less now, but in those days, those things took serious amount of power. I mean, I'm sitting there going, how long did it take? They basically busted the place up. A lot of the seat sections were out, so people could walk in and out with these big grand entrances and all this power cables coming in. But plus, just to wheel that stuff in, you can't wheel through where the Zamboni comes in. You got to take seats out to get the size of these screens and stuff that are in there. Yeah. It's really, I mean, I bet it takes them a month or 3 weeks to do it. And then turn it back into a stadium again.
Right.
It's a big deal. And then, you know, you got the whole parking area around it. I mean, the thing is...
During the day, the speeches are at night. During the day, they've got, you know, minor shows, side acts, or what?
Well, actually, there's a bunch of stuff going on at McCormick Place. I don't know what's going on over there. Plus, Pritzker's throwing a big party at the Salt Shed. Is it tonight or tomorrow? It's right by me.
Nice.
Well, I mean, there's... I don't know how much they do
you
this.
You know, the same group that operates the Board of Trade operates the salt shed.
Really?
I should ask, you know, where are our tickets?
Yeah, well, we want a box. We don't want to go standing with the schmoes. So, but the... yeah, it's... It is... I think the... I don't know if they do this anymore, but back in those days, the first couple of days during the day, they actually would have serious... Everybody's there fighting about the platform.
Well, they haven't said anything yet, so she's got to... Or somebody's got to announce their policies, right?
Well, but there's the party platform that they should already be working on. I don't even, did they even publish
it? Oh, 4,000 delegates.
4,000?
4,000 delegates.
So there's 10 of them for every representative?
You got some party people for each.
How many, why don't you say how many?
Maybe
how many,
staff?
Yeah, how many delegates is how many actual delegates does Illinois have? I think it's the same. I think it's reps plus senators, but I could be wrong. I bet it's like 22 or something. What do we got, 20 reps and two senators?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. But anyway, it's you know, they used to work on the platform and then put the platform on. And then the platform would be, here's where we are on this issue. I don't think they do that anymore.
Well, the theme today is for the people. I read that.
For what people?
Yeah, the First Lady is speaking, and the theme today is for the people.
Whose people? Their people?
Well, it's the DNC.
It's the people. It's, you know, this whole thing.
Hillary might be speaking today too, because I know Obama's tomorrow.
Greg, I love the idea that a city has some vibrancy to it, but somewhere along the
line, I don't know if vibrancy is. we got some people on edge.
Did you see this thing this week regarding? This NASCAR race. Now, I don't know the exact people that are. Let's put it this way: if Greg and Chief Porta Potties got the contract for the NASCAR race, we would think it's the best thing on earth. If Sirius Cafe got the catering for the high end boxes, Sirius would think this was the best thing on earth. If we were the construction guys that put those things up and tore them down, we would think it's the best thing on earth. Everybody else is inconvenience. Now, some people like going to the race. That's fine. But everybody else is inconvenience. Can't play softball, can't do this, can't do that, can't do any of that stuff anymore over in Grant Park. And all of a sudden, there's a tab for all this. And the idea that somehow, if you're loony enough as a citizen to think that somehow if all these other people make money, it trickles down to you, I got to put you in second-grade economics. I mean, the last thing is for the NASCAR, they got a bill for $600,000 from the parking meter people. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Because they lost income.
Yeah, so in this ridiculous parking meter thing that Mayor Daley put through, when people had like an hour to read the thing, so it means they never even read it, somewhere buried in there, if the city does anything, they put a festival on. Like even if they put a festival on a Saturday on Armitage, which is right by me, which by the way they did, and I don't know how scrupulous these guys are with this. If you take the, I'll say, 100 parking meters out of circulation for this festival for a Friday night and Saturday, there's no parking there. I mean, no band Sunday, I don't think. Friday night and a Saturday, they can send the city a bill for the parking for those meters as if there wasn't a festival.
I'd like to get a look at those agreements and laws and just try to
poke holes. They're done, they're signed, they're done.
Yeah, they're signed. I mean, I'm sure there's
that's the big one.
Things. Yeah.
That's the big one.
But if you get enough lawyers to look at it, I'm sure you can find something to mess with them.
How?
I don't know, but I'm sure there's something.
It says if you close off the meters and we don't get
but there's
income,
a certain way to not close off the street in the different.
If
you
straight.
Do it
how
at this time at this for
how are you going to close off a street and still let people park at the meter?
You do what the government always does. You change the rules so that it's not called the street anymore.
I'm saying
that's
why it's called a contract. And
right.
And the people from Morgan Stanley, whoever did it, a lot smarter than people in the city who didn't read it.
Yeah, but that's the good news about being the government is you can change the rules as you go.
The only thing I think you could maybe do is put some guy who really knows how to dig back into stuff, somebody like Carl. If you found one dinner one dime that was paid off on somebody to have the thing done.
Now, you're talking about legit ways to do things. I'm talking about Chicago ways to do things.
You mean
things.
Just say that the thing's null and void?
No, I'm not saying null and void. I'm saying you do what the government always does. You change you move the goalposts. So if it's you have to spot or you have to compensate for lost parking on streets or something, then you change it to something else that's not a street, and then all of a sudden you don't have to do it anymore. And then you just have them come to court with you for however long, and you battle it out that way and just make them...
Well, for a long period of time...
You make it hurt.
For a long period of time in front of our building, there was no parking things. You didn't have to pay. Now, the firemen pretty much parked there, so nobody messed with them. All of a sudden, one day, somebody from their group, whoever the parking people are, noticed that this was a street downtown that didn't have meters on it. When I say meters, you don't actually have a meter anymore. You've got a sign up, and you have to pay, and there's a thing you can go and either pay them there or you can pay on your phone. All of a sudden, it was up there, and everybody says, hey, what the hell? And they said, no. If they find a spot that is within the contract, there's no meters, they can immediately say, you got to put a meter up there, and you have to let them do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that the lawyers and whoever for that group were very good, but it doesn't matter when you're the government.
Well, I mean, how many people in Indiana are
that's why I hate. That's why the bond ratings are so low, and the debt we have to pay so much for debt is because, you know, we're irresponsible and this kind of shit happens.
Well,
let's actually make it count.
Well, you know that I love going to Club Lago.
Right. And they put up...
It cost me 11 bucks,
yeah.
11 bucks to park, to go inside and have a glass of wine and see my buddies.
Right.
Well, come on.
Bush League.
You know, how much... What do you suppose... But the thing that's so idiotic about it, Greg, is the city gets a lot of taxes from Club Lago. Their property taxes...
It's like you shoot yourself in the foot.
You shoot yourself in the foot. So, I mean, I'm going to say it costs them... I'm going to say there's 30 times a year I don't go there.
Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah, whenever
that's just you, and there's got to be 50 of you.
Well, I never get out of there for less than 50 bucks.
Right.
A couple glasses of wine, a sandwich, and nice tip, and it's 50 bucks.
Right.
So it's $1,500. I'm not giving Club Lago because I don't want to give the city,
right,
you know, 300 or 330.
And there's people who are definitely, there's multiples of people just like that who are saying, this is silly. Not even worth it.
You know, you notice it. I mean, you get more observant over time, seemingly, or maybe you got nothing else to think about. But, you know, I stop up at the Tripoli a couple nights a week because the older guys that I have befriended, and mostly judges and attorneys, I learn so much from them that it's like a class every week, right? So it's, I'm not a giver. I'm the taker, right? But you used to notice if you stopped up at Tripoli during a week, you know, they've got the guys that were across the street, the older dudes, they were in shoes, they're in there because shoes closed during COVID. There used to be one or two couples every night that maybe were going to dinner somewhere else and would pull up in front of Tripoli, walk in, and they'd have one glass of wine, which was a hell of a lot cheaper. Then maybe they'd head to the restaurant and, you know, their reservations were 7:30. They'd stop at the Tripoli 6:30, have one drink, and head out. You never see that. Because nobody wants to pay the $5 just to come in and have one drink.
That's too bad.
But it's not just the $5. It's a pain in the ass. You know, Mitty Weber told me, don't ever put your credit card into one of those things. So you got to have the app on your phone. You know, you got to sit there. It's not that hard. It's actually fairly easy of an app because if you're in the place and all of a sudden you bump into somebody you want to hang a little bit, you can extend it a half hour right from inside. You don't go back out. But still, I'll bet it costs Nick... How many people are in a weeknight? If you're going to come in and party, and if it's something you're going to stop by, you're going to pay the parking. But you're not going to do it just to come in and stop for a quick one to see if anybody's there. I bet it costs him, 500 people a year. Easy. Huh. Maybe more. You know, maybe it's just one drink, whatever, but now that's taxes you could be getting there instead of going to these people. What about the people that moved to Indiana and now $8 to come across the Skyway?
Yep.
It's $16. If somebody, Audrey's got somebody, she sold her house, they moved to don't know, it was Hammond or someplace. Not Hammond, probably. Well, might have been Hammond, but somewhere over there. The guy's like...
Muncie?
Whatever. He goes, whatever it was, because Indiana Toll Road raised all their stuff because they sold that thing too, right? So you got to pay a toll in Indiana, right, maybe a mile after the Skyway Bridge. So it's got to be $10 each way. So the guy's like, it's 400 hours a week in tolls. That's more than I'm saving in my mortgage.
Whoops.
Yeah. 400 hours a month, sorry. That's a lot of dough.
Yeah.
It's for what? The Skyway's a mile and a half long? 2 miles long? Really? I think it was built in 1950-something. It's not paid off yet. And it goes up every year? For what? S&P Futures up 350, NASDAQ Futures 850. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Is your online trading career hit a double bottom with no one to talk strategies with? Are commissions eating up all your profits? You need help. You need PTIProDirect.com. Trade stocks for 1 cent a share, stock options for $1 a contract, all with a $1 minimum per trade for stock and options. That's right, $1, Chuck. And best of all, you get to talk to former option floor traders to fine-tune your trading game plan. So check it out at PTIProDirect.com. That's PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Rick Pappas in the studio. Matt Byrne on the board. We should have Mr. Flanagan here in a second. S&P Futures up 275. NASDAQ Futures up 5. So we're flipping back and forth across the flat line here. Dow futures are down 8, so it's a snoozer of a morning so far. Europe, not much here either. DAX up 29.1%. FTSE down 2, call that flat. CAC around up 24.3%. So, slightly the upside there. Malaysia, Nikkei down 674, 1.8%. These guys up and down, but they were down up huge last week. So, They're still 37,388. Hang Seng up 139.8%, 17,569. Shanghai up 14. Probably did a little something. It's up 0.5%, 28.93. Maybe tomorrow, 2,900. We will see. Friday, Dow is up 96. S&P up 11. NASDAQ up 37, which is pretty good considering how much it was up during the week. So it didn't fall. It a couple times looked like it might have, but it didn't. Bonds down 1 basis point, 3.88. Bund up down 2 basis points, 2.23. Japan up 1.89. Oil down 70 cents, still at the, well, I'm going to say the range between 72 and like 83. So where does 75.95 put us, Greg? Somewhere in the low middle. It's down 70 cents. Brent down 60 cents, 79.06. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.15. RBOB down a penny, 2.29. It's the first time it's been under 2.30 in quite a while. Gold down 12 bucks. They had a huge week last week. But it's 2,500. 2,525 is the December contract. 2,501 is the August. What's come off this week, right, Greg? The August is this week? It dies?
Yeah.
Silver's up a dime, 28.95, trying to make it back to 29. We'll see if it does. Foreign exchange, the euro is up, well, it's up, it's over 110, so the dollar has been shrinking a little bit. British pound, same way, 129.4. The yen, 146. The yen actually is going up as well, so the dollar's down on all three of these things. Again, I say this every day, the yen is the opposite way they look at this stuff. So as the yen goes down, the dollar goes up. I mean, as the yen goes down, the dollar goes down, the other way around than the other two. Even confusing for me. Why is that? Why is that, Greg? Why do they do it this different from all of them, but they do? Bitcoin down 1,600, 58,082. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, the Cubs. How many times have been shut out this year? About 10?
Yeah, it's not too good for the Cubs. OBS, it is currently 6:37 a.m. on August 19th, 2024. Weather in Chicago, 66 degrees this morning. Mostly sunny skies today with windy and less humid today and a low of 62. Windy this evening and a high of 62. Down in Phoenix, 86 degrees right now. Mostly sunny skies today. It'll be truly hot with a high of 111 degrees. Now into the MLB yesterday. White Sox lose to Astros 0-2, and Cubs lose to Blue Jays 0-1. In the NFL preseason's Week 2, Bears beat Bengals 27-3, and Packers lose to Broncos 27-2. In tennis, it's the U.S. Open. It starts today at 10 a.m. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
You guys got your Super Bowl tickets? Just saying. We have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
Good morning,
Dan. How are you?
Good.
I made it in. I thought maybe they, you know, the bridges would be up and be like, you know, escape from New York, but no, it's fairly normal here so far.
So what do you think about our plan to get Lightfoot to come back and redeem herself by having her chase after the parking people?
I think that, Jen, unless you can find a way, this is one man's opinion, you're the attorney, the city guy, unless you can find a way that there was a problem, plus it's got to be over 7 years, that they paid to put the thing in, I don't think you can go back on incompetence. We didn't read it.
I don't think so either. I mean, and you know, the latest debacle with the NASCAR shutdown of parking, you know, the city has to eat, so it was pretty stupid.
Maybe we should have a mayor that reads the damn thing. Is that too much to ask? He's out promoting. He's acting like community organizer. I mean, he's a mayor.
Personally, if you just change the licenses to only certain people can have these licenses and you just shut them out, isn't this like strong arming 101?
What do you mean? The people of Morgan Stanley are more powerful than the city.
I'm talking about you change the rules.
I think they would lose any case in court. What do you think, Jen?
Yeah. You know, there's a mayor of Dole that will be looking for a job. Maybe, you know, Chicago's got her name out. So.
Well, the police chief, too. They're trying to get rid of him. He's only the biggest crook that ever walked. God bless. Allegedly. Sorry. Greg, I'm glad you're here, because Jen and I wanted to talk about here a little bit. We want to expand a little bit on what Kevin and I were talking about on Friday regarding these companies that are getting all these contracts from the government that are all not-for-profit. And I'm sitting there going, I'm not so sure that's the way. But what I wanted to talk to you about, John, is what is, and Greg, when you talk about politicians, because an article I sent around last night, and I always interrupt myself, is it really bad when you start interrupting yourself and not just other people? That's bad. What's his name? The Chicago Fed president, Goolsbee, I'm not a huge fan of, talked about Harris and Trump's inflation arguments are questionable, meaning they're total BS, according to him. And he's right. You know, I mean, but what if we're running for office? You know, Greg's running for president of Greece or something. And Jan, I don't know, where would you run for, Jan? Alderman? You'd be a good alderman. I could see you being a precinct captain running to alderman. You could be one of those guys.
Or committeeman might be.
Yeah, you'd be one of those
better
guys.
Better than alderman, I think.
Well, you can be both.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, then you get, you know, anyway, the, how do you mesh truth with politics? And I'm asking the real question, because when you lie, you can either lie, I'm going to use the term, by commission or by omission, right? And I'm going to say that if, you know, one of the things that I don't worry about doing the show is I never lie. So I don't. What did the one guy say? The wrestler who run for mayor of something. I find if I don't lie, I don't have to remember what I said. That's exactly true. But if you are confident that if somebody asks you the same question 2 days later, you answer it the same way, you don't even worry about what you said. Now, if you lie all the time, you got to be careful to cover, right? It becomes very difficult to do. But the most, I'm going to say in my lifetime, for me, that I remember, because I like sports, the biggest lie of omission had to be when Sammy Sosa was in front of the Senate, right? Or was it the House, talking about steroids? You remember what he said, Greg?
What did he say about other people?
He said,
I think he told
the truth. No. He said, I have never broken the laws of the United States or the Dominican Republic, and I've never injected myself with steroids.
Right.
Okay, now I'm guessing that he was perfectly
ding,
truthful.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, I mean, he obviously doesn't like needles.
Right.
But doesn't mean that he didn't buy everything he possibly could in Mexico where they were totally available. And
have someone else
pills. Just take pills.
Or do the pills, yeah.
And, I mean, so people said, to this day, people will say that Sammy Sosa said he never took steroids. He never said that. Now, my question is, if I'm running for office, and first of all, you have to have enough of an ego if you're going to do that and wreck your life by running for one of these things, or wreck any kind of normal life, you have to have an ego that thinks the world is a better place if I win this election. And if you think the other person's going to do a better job than you, A, you're not going to run, and B, you're not going to fight that hard, and you're not going to run a line to people. But if I happen to believe that one of the biggest problems in the city is this, the way the teachers' union has gotten all this power. I think the schools are basically horse bleep. I think everybody's paid too much. I think they retire too early in some cases.
Did you guys see that thing out of Illinois policy the other day? one out of three teachers has a kid in private school.
Well, yeah.
That's pretty good.
But if I was going to go speak in front of the teachers' union, I'm going to say, if you elect me mayor, I guarantee you that the teachers' union is funded to the fully to do the job and blah, blah, blah. And I have some long way of saying this when deep in my heart of hearts, I know the first thing I'm going to do is cut the hell out of them. Yet, in my mind, they'll be fully funded, just not fully funded in their mind. So, am I lying or not, Jen? But, I mean, there's no way that if I'm going to go in front of the police union, the first thing I want to say is, you know what? Guys, it's a really tough job. My dad was one. My uncle was one. I sympathize with you. I don't know how you do it, blah, blah, blah. We're asking a lot from you. But by the way, when you retire from the street, which I get why you want to, you're going to be either an evidence technician, you're going to be something, we're going to retrain you. Forget about getting a check at age 50. It ain't happening. Not till you're 62 or 65. Now, if I go to talk to those guys, I'm probably not going to say that, but do I dance around it, knowing that's what I'm going to do? So that's lying by omission and combing. Can you run for office without being a flat-ass liar, I guess is my question.
depends who's keeping track of you, you know, while you're doing this, because it's all about, you know, tailoring something to an audience that you hope has no interest in following you the next day when you talk to a completely different constituency and say the exact opposite thing. I mean, that's what the press is supposed to do, you know, to look for inconsistencies, to look for, you know, funny lines of, you know, discussion, so that you're not just, you know, accused of being, you know, something not worth listening to because you say whatever you have to. But of course, that's what people do now. They're expected to do it, and they're paid to do it. This is, you know, the whole idea of contributing to somebody's campaign. It's about pushing a, you know, a message and making sure that, you know, you say this in some fashion or another, no matter who you speak to, and it becomes, you know, what did Russell's daughter call it one time on the show? The talking points.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about talking points. It's not about even messaging or consistent messaging or honest messaging at all. There's no room for that. And
well, the talking points ought to be your message, though, John. They shouldn't just be...
Right.
I mean...
But it isn't, Tom, and no, you know, funding mechanism to get you, you know, in a race, a serious race, where you have some expectation of actually winning. No pipeline of money is going to continue unless you adhere to what you've been paid to say.
Well, so the talking points, actually, believe it or not, I know this, John, it's just an opinion. When I ran for the board, Greg, can you imagine me at, we had to go to school for media training, myself and the guy who ran with me, Merrill Ferguson. And we had this young lady who had been a national reporter, very nice and really bright, good Lord. And but she's had a couple of kids and was taking a few years off, but she was doing this on the side. So there's in this consulting firm had, and when you talk about the term, this is 1992, you know, so it was a long time ago. So the term talking points I had never heard, but they were not defined back then, John, as a bunch of crap. They were, okay, why are you guys running? Well, we want to keep open outcry. We want to keep auction in the market. We want to make sure that, you know, that we want to maintain a competitive marketplace. We want to maintain separation of agent and principal, person who actually makes a trade for you and a person who trades for himself. They shouldn't be the same person. I mean, there were reasons why we ran. And she said, okay, you put down the four reasons why you think you should be in office, four or five, that are different from the other people, or maybe not, but you just want to emphasize them. And those are your, quote, they're not only your talking points, they're your reason for running. And she said, if a media person calls you up, you immediately say, I definitely want to talk to you, because guess what? If all of a sudden, you know, say the race for the board at the CBO ever got hot, which it didn't, which is some little race. But if it ever did, and some national reporter said, "Hey, we have this contentious race at the Chicago Board Options Exchange, which is a major exchange, and these guys running," somebody sticks a microphone in your face or calls you, you can't buy that level of media. You can't afford it. Neither can the people running. Neither can the CBO. But now they're going to give you 30 seconds on national TV, which you can't afford. So you can't say no. So, okay, you say, I'll meet you at X, or I'll talk to you. You write down your reasons for running, the things that set you apart from the other person. Term talking points, it's turned that, but that's kind of a, you know, what's the word, John, when you minimize something? I mean, it's it shouldn't just be, quote, talking point. So if somebody says, you know, some guy or girl says, Tom, how's your golf game? And you go, boy, I sure wish I was able to play more golf, but since I've been running for this position and want to accomplish these things, then you immediately talk about why you're running, what sets you apart for the other person. Now, that gets to the point now where they'll ask you an absolute question. And Trump is terrific at this, and everybody is, but he's worse than most. They'll say, what do you think about aid to Israel? Yeah, he said, I tell you how bad I beat Hillary in the last election. What? So and both are doing a little of that, but But I'm saying you can't go so far off the reservation that you become a buffoon either. You know what I'm saying? You got to turn it into what you got 30 seconds to say why you're running, so you got to do it. And nobody cares about your golf game. You know, I don't even care about my golf game. So, you know what I'm saying, Jay? There's a way that this is done properly, then there's a way where it gets totally out of hand. Where somebody asks me, gee, do you think we should bomb the SIBO? Hey, did I tell you about the open outcry? You know, it reaches a point where it becomes buffoonery, and I think we're sort of there.
It looks like we've got an online course from, what's that place, Udemy? It's the online, mini college or whatever. Complete Media Training Masterclass.
Yeah.
It says, for every situation, audience, and skill level.
It is. I only went one night, and the best part
of
it.
28 hours.
Is the lady unfortunately for him, fortunately for me, picked on Merrill. So she immediately said, "Okay, why are you running?" Well, I want to keep the. I want to keep the. Trading legit or something like that. And she goes, oh, so it's not legit now? They played.
Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, no, no, no. They played two interviews. This is going to be long before your time, Greg. One of them was remember Bob Newhart from the Bob Newhart Show? Well, they get him on, and he's got this beautiful blonde bombshell interviewing him, right? And she goes, and on break, she goes, don't worry, Bob. He's asking a couple of questions. Then she just launches into him about what he does as a psychologist. And he wasn't prepared. And she said, well, how...
Surprise!
Yeah, she goes, how long does it take for you to cure somebody? He goes, well, you're never exactly cured. I mean, as we manage issues. She goes, how much do you charge?
Oh, no.
And he goes, well, it's like $75 an hour. So you charge $75 an hour and you've never cured a person.
Oh, no.
I mean, she was just... And then they go to break, and he's sitting there looking at his face like a deer in the headlights. Oh, we just have a couple more questions. That was very good, Bob, by the way. She's schmoozing him. Then they flip to how you're supposed to do it. Remember the big dumb pitcher in Bull Durham? Where Kevin Costner said, I'm going to give you your talking points? And the guy's dumb as a rack, right? So he gets down there, and this lady starts interviewing him. And he's got his cliches now, his talking points. And he says to her, wow, I saw you on TV a couple weeks ago. You've changed your hair. It really looks nice. First thing he says to her. So she's blushing. He's a good-looking guy. It's Tim Robbins. And then she starts asking him, so you're here. What are you going to do? And he goes, whatever the team wants me to do. I'm just here to help this team win. Well, you don't care if you relieve for a while. I just said, if they want me to steal bases, I'll steal bases. Whatever the team wants me to do, I'm just here to... He was perfect. And he's dumb as a rock. And Bob Newhart is an educated psychologist, right? So you gotta kind of learn what you're doing.
What do you think the strategy is with Biden?
I think he just, who knows? I mean, I think he just got to the point where, well, first of all, nobody should have
I think scheduled. They just kept him out of the, they didn't want the pressure of having that, so they just said, we're not doing this anymore.
What Harris, who possessed same. Him, what who possessed anybody to give him an hour and a half on his feet debate after his bedtime?
Well, I don't know, but I think the point is they were just saying this isn't going to work out, so we're just not going to do it.
Well,
there's too much risk in that, and I think the same strategy kind of applies with Harris now, where if we don't announce any policies or really the put it up on the website, you know, they can't really come after us for it leaves the door closed instead of open for them to put themselves in any trouble.
Well, I mean, just for an example, take a look at this article about, you read this thing about Goolsbee, Jen? Chicago Federal Reserve President Austin Goolsbee warned against misrepresenting the inflationary impacts of corporate price hikes and tariffs, but steered away from directly speaking on the presidential race. So what are the chances, Jen, of Kamala Harris coming on tomorrow talking about inflation and saying, first of all, I think you and I and Greg know that inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. So, Kamala Harris, which would you rather say? I'm going to make sure that people do not gouge you, the food store, and other things. We're going to be on these guys to make sure they don't gouge you and this inflation. We know it's hurting you. We know it's hurting the population. We'll find a way to help the people without a lot of money pay for their food. Or you could say...
You think he got uninvited from Jackson Hole for saying that?
No. Because
no, he's got to speak.
Well, you know, he just said, you know, just be careful. But now the other thing, the truthful way would be for them to come out and say, we know you're hurting from this inflation. The inflation stems from incredibly horrible monetary policy of the last two administrations because they spent so much the Fed had to bail them out. And we caused the inflation, but the last two presidents did, but under my presidency, I'm going to fix it. You think she's going to throw the other two idiots under the bus, even though she doesn't like Trump?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. But that would be the truth.
But that would open yourself up
when
you're the guy for them to do that to you.
So I'm long-winded, Jen. How do you mesh the truth with politics?
Well, I think one way you do it, and this is why the June 27th debate was so consequential, there was no fact-checking by the people asking the questions, and the previous presidential debates had become laughable because the moderators, Chris Wallace's, and they did more talking than the candidates a lot of times, which is not why people watch debates, I don't think. But that was a case of letting the candidates, bloviate as long as they could until they reached the time limit, and if they hadn't answered the question, you didn't badger the person for not having answered it. You just asked the question again. And this showed, on both sides how people wander from what they're trying to say in a pressure moment. They're asked something, and but you begin to see the performance aspects of it that are all telling. And of course, that's exactly the kind of debate the people, I think, behind Biden wanted that time, to completely humiliate him on national TV in a way that they knew they had to if they wanted him off the ticket.
Well, that could be, but how could you possibly, unless you had a cattle prod, how would you ever get Trump to answer your question?
Well, you do it just the way it took place on June 27th. He gave wide ranging answers in his inimitable way, but people could listen to him, and they didn't have to worry about Jake Tapper.
Well, but he didn't answer any of the questions they asked him. He answered the questions he wanted to answer, whether that was asked or not.
If they're going to tune in and watch it, I think most people know when somebody isn't answering the question, and they don't need the moderator, fact checking constantly, because that's done selectively, as we know from past debates too. But people are smart enough to know what's a compelling enough performance and what's not. You don't need the moderators underscoring it and italicizing it for you. So that was the fairest debate. I think that was the reason it was chosen for that format, to do exactly what it accomplished. But
I have a few Trumper friends that if they did that, they'd be picking at him.
Well, but that's preferable to the debates in 2016 and 2020, I think.
Well, there was a time when people used to...
I think people would say that was a more telling... That was the most consequential debate, is what they called it, and there's a reason why. Of course, it was because Biden looked so awful, but he looked so awful because of the way the debate was conducted.
Well, I think you need a... I don't know if you want to call it fact check, but I don't know what the term would be. But if you got a guy like Biden, and you say, even when he was somewhat coherent, if you want to say, well, what are you going to do about the oil industry? We have to stop fossil fuels. We have to invest in my first year in my presidency, I'm going to cancel the leases on 20 million acres of federal lands. I think, Jan, most people, including me, till I looked at it, most people have no idea that with the 90 bazillion acres of federal lands that are leased out for...
Well, before you go there, talk about... When Goolsbee was asked about, do prices go up when... they were talking about her new plan to cap prices at grocery stores.
He said to not necessarily blame the stores or something along those lines.
Right. So what he was saying is the way to answer it as a politician... He's saying the difference between what's happening to prices and what's happening costs, that can vary a lot over the business cycle. So you answer the question, but you don't take a position. You just kind of say, well, it depends on a lot of other things.
Well, you can't be...
He's a great politician.
Why, have I never answered a question?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's kind of not what I'm looking for at a time when we have all these problems.
We always have a lot of problems, but who can answer them in the way that...
What if Roosevelt would have wish-washed his way through the whole war and depression? Where would we be? Somewhere,
in a different spot.
Yeah, someplace, somewhere.
Could be better, could be worse, but...
But I don't know, John, am I just getting grumpy? Someplace, somewhere, and I don't necessarily want a fact check on everything, because then again, who'll check the checkers, right?
Oh, here's another good thing. I just saw Goolsbee said that tariffs don't result in long-term inflation, but by making producer costs more expensive, they increase consumer prices in the short term. So, yes and no at the same time. Well, it depends on where you are.
I need a blackboard in 20 minutes for this, but you can, if you have an oil embargo, and John and I were around when this happened, and all the price of oil goes up, it's going to go up, okay, by an external shock. So there's no question that you're going to...
Okay, quiz me. I'll answer like Goolsbee. Ask me the question that you were asking again.
No, what I'm saying is the general price level does not go up. Oil's going to go up in the short term because now you got to pay more for gas. You have less money for something else, so demand for other stuff is going to go down, so those prices are going to go down. But I don't expect... I mean, the fact checker should come out after Harris and say, hey, Kamala, pick another industry, will you? Because your food industry is probably the most competitive one out there. There's all kinds of food stores, and their normal profit margin is 1%. Why are you blaming them? Because that's where most people see... Where do you see prices where you stare at them every day? At the food store or the gas pump, right? So that's the one right on the tip of everybody's tongue, and that's where you go if you want to make a big splash, even though there's nothing you can do about it. Am I right, Jen?
Yep.
Go ahead. John, you muted yourself or something.
How are you supposed to get elected if you don't say the hot topic?
Well, that's right. That's kind of what we're debating.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go to a quick break. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 5. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. We have Matt Byrne on the board, and we have Dan Flanagan with us. S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 13. I don't see any reason why we're going to head south this week. We've been pretty strong to the upside, and I'm going to say we had the best week in a long, long time for clients, so I'm pretty happy about the whole mess. So there you have it. John, you still with us? Did you unmute yourself?
Kevin was just texting about how Trump fell for the bait with Biden's debate offer, and had he not accepted that challenge, Biden would still be the candidate. And I agree.
Probably.
This was not why. I mean, it was a debate. It was the purpose of the debate, Tom, and this is why it's at one level it was the most free of any kind of interjections by the people running it, and also the most naked performance that kind of shattered people's image of Biden. In a way that you couldn't.
It shattered his, image because he's getting old. Just let him be old. Let him be gone. He's gone.
But it was about not just letting him. It was making him go.
I don't know. I thought he was out this week.
This is why this whole thing is the entire process now. I think has just become some other kind of shadow boxing, where the party has done several coup-type events and tried to mask it in a very clumsy way, I think. It's going to be playing out for the next four nights in Chicago, where you see just how, how the smoke-filled rooms are enough to gag the entire nation.
as you look through this stuff, and I know, I'm in the middle of all this stuff, and I know you and Kevin and some other people are on the right, and hopefully when Brendan comes back, I'll have somebody on the left. But everybody has to keep pointing fingers at these people. Kevin just texted me about Harris is part of a failed administration because all these things she's talking about are hurting people happened during their watch. No, they didn't. For God's sake, John, this has been 25 years in coming. All this stuff, you can trace everything that's happened today easily back to 2000 and maybe before that. Everything. I did this stuff last week, and I keep sending the stuff out, and it doesn't seem to fall in anybody's ears. All this healthcare stuff. You can blame it on Biden. You can do it. Blame it on the Houthis. I don't care. But the fact is, this stuff started to jump back in the Bush administration, in the Clinton administration, before that. The percentage of all this mess with the healthcare, where we have money after money going all this stuff, and yet it's controlled by a few people. There was another combination of hospitals in there this weekend. It never ends, and it's meant the whole. The idea of blaming the healthcare crisis on Biden or Harris is about whatever. Did they do anything to fix it? No. They weren't near as omniscient as Bush was. He ignored it totally for 8 years. Now, he had 9/11 to worry about, but that was an excuse, probably. This has been relentless, absolutely relentless, and on all these fronts. The middle class didn't just disappear in the last 4 years. I mean, unless you know can observe the root cause, and we got to change the root causes. And my concern about this election, I don't care who wins, neither one of them are capable of the fight you need to turn this bus, even slow it down. Neither one of them. Trump was there for 4 years. He didn't do any of it. All the stuff he talked about with the health care came right off his sight the day he won, right? He didn't do any of it. He has no more ability or...
Tom, it's always been that way. You go back to the lead up to the Civil War and the political, the party alignments, going up to that election starting in 1820. It was pretty much a fait accompli what was going to happen at some point. And there were all sorts of stopgap measures to prevent the country from coming to blows over a whole range of issues. But there was no way that you were going to, in an election cycle, then or now, get elected while you're talking about what's been wrong in this country for the last 50 years. Because, first of all, that's the reason you're in a mess at all is because you can't change the country as dramatically in any kind of presidential cycle as you would like to. So stuff gets entrenched. You get the branches of government sort of frozen and ossified. And it, you know, the party struggles become kind of meaningless after a while too. The parties shift their emphasis. You get people who can talk a good line or give some semi-winder speeches and make people think it all happened in the last 4 years or the last 8 years, but it didn't. And yet this is how it's always functioned. It's no worse now than it ever was. Well, maybe it's better at some point. I don't know.
Every once in a while, though, Janet, you can bump along. I use the term peacetime generals. You can bump along, but if you bump along and don't pay attention to bad stuff that's happening, I'm not saying we could have done anything different with Hitler or any of those people. All of a sudden, one day, things become a crisis. They probably were long in coming, but all of a sudden, they're a crisis. Now, you talk about, are the Kamala Harris, Donald Trump circus, is it the same as every other circus? In a lot of ways, yeah. Okay, yet the U.S., the debt, federal debt to GDP is 122%, all right? Now, if you go back to 1990, I'm going to say that number was, where is it here, debt to GDP? I don't know if they had it then, Vic. We got to go further. Oops. Let's go to 2000, because there's a lot of these figures they didn't have. I'm going to say the debt to GDP in 2000 was like, maybe 30%, 40%. Let's see. National debt was 5.5, and the GDP was 10. So okay, we were 50%. Now we're 122%. Someplace, somewhere, these questions, you can't go to 200 and not have the place resemble anything. This is, and now we have a potential of war on two fronts. Hopefully, we don't get there, but it. You've got people that are making 38 grand a year or 40,000 a year looking at an overnight stay at Northwestern of 11,000 bucks. A third of a year's pay? I mean, we're at a stage, John, where we can't be using the same BS. Once in a while, you'd like to just use the same BS, right? You and I would like to be running for alderman when the award is, everything's going great, and you guys just throw some stuff around about, you know, you and I just throw a little bit of rain or muck back and forth, and one of us gets in. And guess what? Both of us are probably competent. The ward's running fine. The world's going good. Everybody's got a job. It's growing. Who cares, right? But once in a while, you get times when it's not like that, when you need somebody to actually look at this and go, okay, without wrecking everything that's good, how do I turn this bus around? I'm looking for somebody that has that kind of capability and is capable of talking about it. I know that's a tall order. But it's not like 1960, you know? I mean, it's not like 1956, I don't think. Just me.
Well, but, you know, consider FDR as a case study. By 1940, Roosevelt was pretty much running against his own record for the last 8 years. And in the eyes of a lot of voters, even people who supported him, thought he hadn't done anything close to what needed to be done. And, you know, the solution was, in 1940, you have a choice between two interventionalist, you know, candidates, Roosevelt, Wilkie. It didn't matter who got elected. We're going to go to war, pronto, some way or another. But that, to me, is an example of how, you know, if you stick around long enough, of course, the Constitution's been amended to prevent that from happening now, so that you don't get the, you know, the right, like Kamala Harris, to be running against yourself for the last 8 years and having made a mess of you just, you know, change the timeline and make sure that you can only confine your mistakes to the last 4 or 8 years of your party, and somebody else has got to get a chance at it somehow or another. That's probably better. But even FDR, as popular as he was, by the time he was running in 1940, he had run out of gas. And, you know, to a large extent, I think he was talking to only the diehards, and the things had changed enough on the international stage to make him look more attractive than he really was. I mean, the court packing thing was a disaster move on his part. It's like, you know, complaining about the CEOs causing, you know, inflation. It's just as ridiculous and idiotic. But he'd lost a lot of political capital as the New Deal had gotten whittled down, and a lot of people saw that it wasn't working as well as it had been sold to. There was still,
well, and also the resistance he had to a lot of everything, and the only right, the only reason why he got,
well, he was running out of you know, he kept his communicative powers, and he was able to reassure people not through debates. You know, he didn't debate, but you know, he gave his fireside chats that, you know, everybody on the block would tune into, whether you liked him or not. You wanted to hear what he had to say, and he could do it, you know, in a masterful way. I mean, nobody better. But, you know, now we've got a situation where, do you really want politicians to be reassuring us that everything's, no, I don't think so.
I don't know if he ever.
And who would do it anyway? Kamala Harris?
I mean, well, I think that one of the biggest holes is in this world of tweets and X's and everything. I think if I was in that spot, first thing I do is every Saturday morning I give a half hour speech about what I'm going to want to accomplish next week. I want to go right to. I don't want to. I learned this.
That's what social media has allowed everybody to do.
But it's a basic thing.
And it's not the same thing, Tom, as coming up on the screen or on your radio feed and speaking. It just isn't the same.
It depends on what you speak about. I mean, I learned this. I used to, when John and I were on The Score, and we had a huge following. Because, not because of us, I think somewhat because of us, but The Score is a massive, you know, it's a 50,000-watt. It could be the best station in the country in terms of power. I would have people talk to me about managing their money, and guys would come in and they'd want to do it and go home, talk to their wife and blah, blah, blah. And I was hitting, you know, 40-50%. And I talked to my cousin who had been a serious salesman his whole life. He says, well, what are you doing? I told him, he goes, well, no wonder you're bleeping up. I go, what do you mean? He goes, don't ever let anybody sell your product other than you. And I go, what are you talking? He goes, don't talk to some guy and expect him to sell his wife on you. Have him bring his wife in and you sell yourself. As soon as I started doing that, John, I don't think I lost a person. Because I'm pretty good at what I do. I'm pretty trustworthy. We had a pretty good program. And, you know, same thing I'm trying to do now for people. And he says, I'm not going to lob some crap out through my... whatever, my media piece in front of a news conference. I'm going to tell people, this week it's going to be on Veterans Affairs. This week it's going to be on inflation. This week it's going to be on something. Even if it's 10 or 15 minutes, this is what I'm going to do and why. That way, there's I don't want to filter this through a bunch of other idiots. Why would I? These people don't appear to be as confident enough to do that. I don't know why. And stick on. I mean, it shouldn't be more. If it's one topic, it should take you 10, 15 minutes, right?
Well, it would be an improvement over what we have.
Show some. This is what has caused this problem in your life over a long period of time, and this is how we're going to try and turn the bus around. Okay, and make it make some sense. And you have to say to people, look, guess what? It may not work, but if it doesn't, we're going to monitor it after a year or two, and I'm going to come back to you and say this one didn't work. We're going to tweak it and try this way. A lot of stuff doesn't work. Right? Trades don't work. The idea is to recognize it, fix them, try and change them into something that either does work or at least is a scratch, and go on to the next one. I mean, this is life. These guys don't seem like they're part of life or something, or they don't think they are.
It's a debased skill, Tom, to be able to do that. And if you could do it every week and find some media outlet that would carry you, first of all, or be, you know, knock it over somebody else to get to you so that they could carry you instead, or all of the networks carry you, which would be
as long as you kept it where they have to give the other side their stuff, which is fine. But if you kept it to 15 minutes, so what? Saturday morning at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, or every station be happy to give you 15 minutes, and then you have to put, you know, let the other guy in for 15 minutes. That's fine. That's why they have those kinds of laws. But hey, I wanted to We got 10 minutes or so, 11 minutes, because I want you to talk to Audrey about the some of the stuff on the real estate as well. But what do you think of Kevin and I talking about? I don't know how I want to fix it, or if there even is a fix, or if the fix is worse than the disease. I you know, we have this idea that if Jan Flanagan decides to have a plumbing company or whatever you happen to be, it'll be Flanagan and Brothers Plumbers or something, right? And you own the place, and your name's on the door, and you know, if there's a problem, somebody gets up the chain and talks to Jan Flanagan. Hey, my toilet doesn't friggin' work, you idiots came over. And then I'm going to say that Jan's a mensch, which is a Jewish term for a really good guy, and Jan's going to make sure the guy's toilet works. And yet, and somebody somewhere along the line invented, which I think was a great invention, something called a corporation. And the corporation, for those that don't know some of the history of this, allows people to get rid of the individual liability. The corporation is sort of a person, but it has rules. Corporation has to have a public board, a public corporation, one, not just one, a tax corporation, has to have, once you go public, you have to have a board of directors. They have to be, some of the people have to be independent. I mean, if we need an SEC attorney, maybe Lou or something could rattle off all the rules, or maybe you could, but there's essentially some caveats on how the place is run. Now, you and I have talked a long time about it. Some of those boards are kind of messed up, and especially if they become a monopolist, and are they really, do the shareholders really run the place versus the management versus the CEO? You know, and you and I could pick places for hours and say, well, don't look to me like these shareholders are running it. But now, and then there were people who were protected in the Constitution as church and state, which is really how it started out, I think, right, John? You're the lawyer. Where if somebody puts up a little church somewhere, you can't tax the bejesus out of them because it stops the church and state separation, so they don't pay any taxes. So you and I can have a 50-foot storefront church out in the middle of nowhere, and they're not going to hit us with taxes. And if people donate us money, and that maybe could be tax deductible, maybe not, but at least we're not paying taxes on it. Now, if we have an employee and we pay him a salary, he or she has to pay, correct?
Right.
Well, how did we get from there to these places getting millions and millions of dollars for border stuff and other stuff? Or University of Notre Dame having essentially a professional football team with a gate every week of what? How many million dollars? And all of a sudden this is all tax deductible. What that has to do with the Basilica of the Sacred Heart, I have no idea. I mean, as much as I love Notre Dame, I mean, how did we get there from here? Why would a government ever give a $30 million contract to a nonprofit? I mean, I don't know. How did we get here, John? And is it the right place?
Well, being a nonprofit is not what being a nonprofit used to be, or whatever it used to mean. Especially, when you got influencers or think tanks that, are technically nonprofit, but they wield tremendous power. This is what, power and profit become sort of meshed together.
But they don't get,
above a certain level.
Do they get, where do they get their money? I mean, if they want to set up I don't know where to start on this, but a think tank could be nonprofit, but who's giving them dough? I have no idea.
Right.
And I know who's giving a church dough.
The effect of giving all that dough and the messaging or the anti-competitiveness in the messaging or the silencing of other messaging becomes part and parcel of your mission. So not for profit, even if you aren't able to trace where there's money changing hands or going into somebody's pocket in a profit type situation, there's still, a power imbalance that is enormously attractive and, gets more investors, gets more contributors, whatever you want to call yourself, gives you more power, gives you a greater platform.
But who would invest in that? If it becomes essentially for profit, which I have to believe, some of these border places are, it depends on how you define profit. I mean, there's not going to be any money left at the end of the day. Okay, so I guess there's no, quote, profit as you and I would define it. But if we set, PTI up as a non-profit at the end of the year. If we made $2 million, my brother and I just grabbed $1 million apiece. I guess that would be profit, wouldn't it, for somebody? I mean, yeah. Granted, we pay taxes on the stuff we get, right? But it still seems a little weird. Where's the control there? I mean, who controls these? There's no board. There's no shareholders. Who decides? And then when they spend $700,000 on lobbyists, there's no board that says that's too much or too little or whatever. I mean, hell, even the president has a boss. The rest of the country, right? These people don't have any. Do they have any bosses?
Well, the education system, I think, is the biggest violator.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have huge power that they wield. Not just in dickering with, you know, foreign heads of state and foreign businesses and investors and, you know, taking money that, you know, could be spent elsewhere, but to spend it for a particular, maybe so-called philanthropic, you know, Ilium Cemetery, you know, purpose. And it becomes a bargaining chip in the way cities get run, the way state budgets are put together. The this kind of culture of a place becomes, you know, consumed by these nonprofits that are masquerading as something they're not, clearly. I know this is a bigger problem than we can tackle today, but this is what has bothered me for a long time, that, you know, the profit part of it is purely a technicality and a grossly misrepresented one, too.
What's the difference between one of these guys and Tesla? They're never going to pay a dividend. They're just going to give the money to Musk.
Right. None that I can see. And even if you can't point to one person who's pocketing this, or you know, a group of people is pocketing it, the institution is pocketing it and growing itself and, you know, stifling others, you know, who can't compete at that level. And, you know, the messaging alone is something that you can't put a price tag on anymore. And it isn't about profit so much as control.
Well, I think it's, maybe it's my Catholic upbringing, Jan, but I think everybody sort of needs a boss. I mean, at PTI, our bosses clearly are, everybody's got their money here, right? And they have a freedom, if they don't think I'm doing a good job, to go somewhere else. If they're not shy about calling up saying, hey, what the hell? Which is fine. That's part of the deal. I mean, I think even to a certain extent, senators have bosses. I mean, they got to win the next election, right? It's not like the same, but even although we've seen corporations, I don't think that Zuckerberg or any of these other people, they don't fear their boredness for a second, right?
No.
And so, I mean, we've gone off the wires. I guess it's more of a big question, John. Do we have these people that are unfettered? Is that a good thing? If somebody can spend, I mean, how does that the head of one of these nonprofits that are getting all this money on the border? And that's just one example. How does that guy ever get fired? I mean, who's to say you spent they spent $1.4 million last year on meetings. And who gets to say, hey, every time you had a meeting, you stayed at the Frank Sinatra suite and had 48 martinis and had 12 hookers. We're not paying for it. I mean, who even says that to the guy? Who could?
Right.
Well, not saying they did, but
The Atlantic Magazine, Tom, which is now owned by Steve Jobs' widow, I think, which, you know, as an arm of a nonprofit or as a supposedly just a journal of thought, politics, whatever, it's got its own show on PBS now that used to be the Washington Week show, which, you know, you remember Wall Street Week and Washington Week and these somewhat adversarial programs that were staffed by people from various newspapers and news organizations, and they were there because they all disagreed with each other at some level, and they got a chance to air their disagreements. Well, now you have the Atlantic, it's Washington Week with the Atlantic, so you get the editor of the Atlantic, and you get all of the other, you know, echo chamber members of the Atlantic on PBS in this dignified way, all sitting around and telling themselves lies and agreeing with each other's lies and, you know, bad mouthing anybody who disagrees with them. Well, what's this doing on public television?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess when once in a while I'll be somewhere and somebody will say, gee, I can't believe that a campaign you know, costs this much. And, you know, and I, for one, John, we start throwing the $1 trillion amount around. I mean, nobody is more confused about what $1 trillion would even look like than me, right? I mean, somebody gives you $1,000 and hundreds, it looks pretty big to me. What a trillion, I don't even. But when you start talking about grants of this magnitude being given to anybody, I mean, somebody says, well, gee, it costs, you know, $500 million to run a presidential campaign. And I go, you know, there's got to be 50 corporations, maybe more, or certainly combinations of corporations, that would happily finance that whole campaign for a president. Because the contracts these guys are winging out are just that big. And what do you suppose these guys are making to put up the fences in the city this week?
Oh, that's industry, Tom.
I mean, or the guys that went for the fence makers to drop 3 or 4 portalettes there. I don't know that I'd want to be in the portalette business, but I'll bet you it's got to be one of the most profitable around. For the NASCAR races, for every street fair, for everything. I bet it's fabulous how much money they make.
All right. The board up business.
All that kind of stuff. Hey, can you hang around for Rod, I hope?
Yeah, sure.
SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 23. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at ptisecurities.com. That's ptisecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ Futures up 21. We got Dow Futures up 14. I'm looking at the Dow list here. And McDonald's up 251. That's about the only one moving kind of at all. Amazon's up $1.11. The rest are just mostly green. But then see the upside a little bit. Google's up 226. Nothing else kind of doing anything so far. I mean, it's going to be not a lot of economic news this week. And we've got the convention, so we're just kind of waiting and seeing on what we're seeing about, but what we're seeing. DAX up 48.2%, FTSE up 7, call that flat. We got the CAC up 33, CAC around up 33, it's point four. So moderately the upside over in Europe. And the Nikkei down 674, that's 1.8%, up, down over there. Hang Seng up 139, up 139.8%, 17,569. They're putting together a little bit of a streak to the upside here. Shanghai up 14, actually they're starting to move up a little bit too, 0.5%, almost back to 2,900, 2,893. Friday was a slow day, but to the upside, so we didn't give up any of our week. It was all to the upside. Dow up 96, S&P's up 11, NASDAQ up 37. Bonds today, down 3 basis points, 3.86. Should be noted the 10-year rate is actually higher since the Fed hinted they're going to cut rates, so careful trading this stuff based on what the Fed says they're going to do. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.23. Japan up 1.89. Oil. Down 70 cents, very muted, 75.95. Oil patch been very quiet. Brent down 67 cents, 79.01. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.15. RBOB down a penny, 2.29. Gold is down 5.60, was down a little bit more. It's only 0.2%, 25.32, still over 2,500. Silver up 23 cents, that's a pretty big move, 29.08. Copper up 4 cents, 4.18. Foreign exchange, dollar continues to slide just a little bit. The euro is now 110.4. I just spent a little bit in the pound, 129.5. And actually, the yen is stronger as well, at 146.14 against the dollar. We have crypto up down to 1,200 points now, 58,452. Matt, what do you got for traffic, weather, sports? Zero runs, two teams. How does that work?
Oh, yeah. It's pretty bad in baseball. But, yeah, it is currently 7:36 a.m. on August 19th, 2024. Weather in Chicago, 72 degrees this morning, mostly sunny skies, windy and less humid today with a low of 62. Down in Phoenix, 86 right now, mostly sunny skies, and it'll be truly hot with a high of 111 degrees. Be thankful that you're not down there today. In the MLB yesterday, White Sox lose to Astros 0-2, and Cubs lose to Blue Jays 0-1. It reminds me of this Onion article. I don't know if you saw this, Chief. You know the Onion, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Headline is MLB reminds White Sox that games are televised.
Gosh.
Just thought you would enjoy that.
When I first got my pooch, Scruff, one of my first dog walkers, worked for the Onion. Mm. God, he was the funniest kid. John, remember the some of their best headlines was we had some crash in the market, and the headline was America desperately searching for a new bubble.
Those are great.
So are you still going over there? I interrupted.
Oh, yeah, just one more. In NFL preseason, week two, we saw Bears beat Bengals on Saturday. That was 27-3. Packers lost to Broncos, though, 27-2. And then today in tennis, U.S. Open starts at 10 a.m. today, so tune in for that. So I got Chief, back to you.
John, you got your tickets to U.S. Open. That's a big high celebrity event, guys like you.
It'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's right where the planes come over for LaGuardia, right? It's in Queens?
Hmm.
Yeah, it's in Flushing. Flushing's right next to Queens. I don't know my New York geography. You just came back from there. Matt, is Flushing is right next to Queens, isn't it?
Queens, I believe, is north of LaGuardia. Because LaGuardia is like right in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's I was at they were doing one of the remodels at LaGuardia years and years ago.
Yeah,
and we had to use the old terminal.
Oof.
And guess, Jan, you remember this? We have Aud.
We do indeed.
The old terminal. I don't know if Audrey flew in there with me. It was the Pan American terminal for when the flying boats used to come around the whole world. They would land in the water and pull up to the dock. It was that's how old that terminal was.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to go around the world in the flying boat, but that was the Clipper, they called it, right?
Yep.
God, you were in the air for forever in that thing, right? Of course, the good news is you could always land, I guess.
Somewhere.
Out in the middle of nowhere.
Wow. Don't know where, though.
You'd be bouncing around. But, Aud, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Fine. How are you guys today?
We're doing good so far, you know. It's a beautiful day. Good Lord. And I didn't have any issues coming in. I did see the huge caravan coming in of delegates last night, and the police, well, they were there. They weren't protecting anybody else in any expressways, but they were there protecting the delegates. It's always, why does this always frost me, Jan and Audrey, but it does.
mean the protesters?
No, I didn't see any protesters. They were nowhere to be found.
Early.
Yeah, you got to go. They just were on somewhere on the north side. They went from where? Wacker and Michigan up to 9th Street and stopped, right, Jen? And just dissipated? I don't think they caused any trouble. So far, yeah. So, but the fences are huge. Bud, why aren't we in the fence business? Those guys are.
Yeah, really. Well, because we didn't have a city contract anyway.
Well, you got to be
that's
in.
That's up with my same irritation factor about the Cook County Forest Preserve signs that used to be up there for 40 years, and now whoever's got that contract with City Hall, they change them like every month or two. And if you really know your forest preserves, like I spent a lot of time with my horse riding through these, there's signs everywhere. So I would have liked the sign deal from the county. I don't even need the fence deal. The sign deal would pay plenty of money.
Well, Jan, I mentioned earlier about clients would come in, you know, when Jan and I were on the score more, and one day some guy comes in and he's, I don't know what kind of deal he had, and he goes, "Chief, what are you doing in this business?" I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You know a lot of people. Everybody likes you. Why don't you get yourself one of these contracts and get rid of all this other stuff? Don't have any clients. Don't worry about the market every day." He goes,
"It's all about who you know, not what you know."
He goes, "I'll help you. I'll get you the luncheon contract at county jail, or the wash the sheet contract. Any one of these things is a lifetime of you in the country club playing golf and playing Jim Rummy the rest of your life. Any one of these things." And he goes,
"Well, you know what they say though, careful who you lay down with dogs, you get up with fleas."
Yes, that is the truth a little bit, but Jan, it's nice to have this stuff, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
you got to pony up a little bit of political contributions.
I don't know. I couldn't put up with those people. Sorry.
You learn to like them.
No, I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't either. But all right. So, Odd, what's going on in real estate? And Jan, what we were supposed to ask you?
Hi, Jan.
Morning, Audrey.
the places that are taking these big hits? Where's that money coming out of? But first of all, Odd, you go on the retail side first. I mean, you're still busy. Stuff's still happening. Is this little drop in mortgage rates? Nancy said last week it's still not enough for a refinance because not that many people are at 8%, but it's better than it was.
Yeah, and it'll bring more people in the market. And if they, you know, if we get another half point, you know, really though, if we're hovering around 6.75, 6.75 now, I believe. So you know what, if you got a half point and you bought a house last year at around 8, it might be enough.
Well, that's what she said.
Cuts by January. That was the last thing I read.
Well, the person writing the article is promising you. The Fed isn't promising anything.
No. I heard that the Fed said 4 cuts. I'd like to know if that's true.
It's true.
I find that hard to believe, but
it's true that whoever writing the article has read that into what he thinks the Fed said. Is that fair, Jen? But that's what Nancy said, too. We need about 1.5 to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, because it'll cost you, you know, a couple grand. And that's, you got to make sure it's worthwhile. Like, you're not moving in a year.
Well, I do my best to stay out of Aud's business because she's good at it and doesn't need me messing it up. Aud, did you sell anything to anybody at an 8% mortgage? I don't think you did. I don't recall that, but you know better than me.
You know what? I had quite a few cash buyers at that time.
That's what I mean. It seems to me like a lot of your people have been cash lately, from what little I hear.
I think the highest one I sold was 7.75.
Was that young couple, or who was it?
Let me think. I think that was my little Greek people.
Were they short, or were they just Greek people?
Oh, I just called them my little Greek people. Oh. I adore them. They're just the sweetest people. But yeah. And just got into a move situation and had to pay up, but they'll probably be the first to refinance when it's possible.
Well, I hope they do. If we get 6.25, it'd be nice to save something. Plus, Nancy will give them a good gig.
Again, what's happened is what always happens with almost any type of thing is that you become accustomed to it. And now, actually, at 6.5, is it 3? No, but. It's come down. It's, you know, people are paying it because if you want a house, you don't have a choice. So, you know, it is what it is there. If we could get them down in the fives, then the market, what would really, really help them, everybody, is that if we got stuff at least down in the fives, and then people who were saying, I'm not selling my house, and they've got a 3% mortgage, might think about it, you know, but it would free up the inventory, though. It would come back on the market, because pretty much whatever's coming back on the market now is people either have to sell, something bad happens in their family, which is always a horrible thing. You've got a death, a divorce, relocation, something that's not a happy time. So people are forced to sell, which I would say is a huge part of the market in the last, since this interest rate hike. People were only moving if they had to. That's the only way things were coming on the market. That's one reason why inventory was artificially constrained. It was just not worth moving.
But when people, maybe it's a giant question, if people get transferred, did the companies give you that massive bonus thing where they'll buy it if you don't take it and you just go, and they give you money for moving and all the other? Are they as generous as they used to be? Used to be when things were good.
Not that I've seen. I don't know about John.
I think it's, there is some of it, but, you know, but I think it's now more of, you know, there's less interest, I think, on the part of businesses to be financing that. And of course they're concentrating their resources rather than opening new offices elsewhere or facilitating the movement of their employees all over the place. Maybe internationally there's a lot of it. I suspect there is, you know, among oil companies or, you know, whatever, to soften the blow for people who are being dislocated every couple of years, schools and everything else. So there's financial incentives.
I had, which was probably within the last year, I asked them that. The only thing that they offered them was to pay for their lodging up here for 60 days until they found the house.
That was it.
It was a big corporation. They didn't.
And they used to take title to the homes. You know, they were the intermediary. They were trading them back and forth for their employees, and you were like in a comfort zone.
They didn't even pay the moving expenses. They must have paid. I don't want to say they must have, but I gotta believe. I hope they paid at least that. The movers.
I would, because I specifically asked him. He said that they had to cover their own housing, their whole home buying and selling expenses. I was really surprised.
Well,
you never know.
Well, what if I'm sitting here doing my cost benefit analysis? If I'm sitting there in a place and all of a sudden I had one kid and lo and behold, the wife goes, "This is yours too," and now we only have one.
One can only hope.
Yeah. So you sit there and go, "All right, I got this place at 3.5. Sure looks to me like another bathroom and bedroom is something we need. Not to mention, maybe, you know, something else in this place needs to be bigger. So we're talking about an addition or something." And I've got this 3.5%. And the addition now is going to be, you know, they're not cheap, right? I'd say 150 grand or something. What rate can I get on that? I mean, if I have to pay like 11 or 12 for that, or put it on my credit card, God hope not, I'm better off going from 3.5 to 5.5, aren't I? Probably. On just a new house.
It's not 5.5. That would be nice.
Yeah.
So if you got to rule that out. But well, it depends too. There's a lot of people who have to live somewhere like Chicago policemen and firemen. They're stuck with having to be in the city. So talk about limited housing stock. You know, so you see a lot of areas where there's a lot of police and firemen that have additions, you know, and on the front, on the top, you've gone up or back to provide the room. But I don't know. I think that the loans are coming in 8 to 10 now, but I don't know, John. What do you think?
They're up. I mean, it's and people are doing it because they have to. I mean, that may seem like a better solution than taking a bath on a new mortgage or in a new neighborhood and taking a chance. So,
or three more people taking a bath in the same bathtub.
Right.
I don't know. We all grew up in a 2 and 3 bedroom house with a one bath and a bed. We all managed to survive.
Yep.
But somehow, of course, we didn't know any better.
We don't know any better. Yeah. Well, the house that I was in my first few years, one bathroom, 3 bedrooms. At one point, they had 9 people there. That's without even a shower. You put the little thing on the tub to wash your hair, right?
Yeah.
But people did it. What if somebody legitimately, down payments, somebody wants to buy a place. 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Nancy gets a mortgage. They put down 10-11% or whatever, 12, maybe it's even 15. They have this 3.5% mortgage. They've been paying for 3 years. You don't knock off a lot your first 3 years. If somebody wants to get a loan to make an expansion on the place, where's your collateral? I guess if the house has gone up in value a bunch, that's your collateral, right? The appreciation.
Yeah, I would say that you use that, or it's like any other borrowing loan. If you've got the debt to ratio, they're going to give you the money.
But that's another appraisal, and you paid $300 for the place, and then if it's now worth $400, that $100 is your collateral, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, or a lot of people got went for personal loans, or you could go in your bank and get a building loan, an expansion loan. I'm happy to give you money.
There's no
you could afford it.
There's no. I hope that the answer to this is no. There's no look back on that, is there, General? I mean, if I buy a place for $300, and all of a sudden the next 3 years, it goes to $400 on value. In let's say, and let's knock on wood here, it doesn't happen. Stock market collapses, and all of a sudden the house goes from $400 in value back to $325, and I've borrowed another $75. They don't give me the evil stare, do they? I mean, as long as I'm making my payments, I'm still all right, right?
Should be okay. Yeah.
Even though the alleged collateral is now poof.
Right, of course, when you go to sell, you may be underwater. So.
Well, it's all hopes we stay there and everybody gets along. There's no divorce and nobody croaks. It can go the other way. I know most people think it can't, but it can. Sometimes these rates fly up, and I was talking to some people the other night, and I was just mentioning to them and that, the reason why I kind of know this stuff because it happened to me. Robin and I got a bridge loan at 8% in November, and by June, when we sold the place, I think we were 14. And so the idea that none of this stuff can go up fast, I'd say it certainly is not likely at all. But that doesn't mean
you
can't.
Well, you want a loan that was tied to the prime.
Yeah.
Duh.
Well, I could certainly see this short-term rate, like you're talking about, Odd, going from 5.5 to 4, in a 10-year rate instead of being 3.9, being 4.5. I mean, that's a more normal situation what we're in now, right? The idea that 10 years cheaper than the 30 days, that's the anomaly. But how long does it have to stay like that before people think that's normal?
Well, I would say most people don't even know that. I mean, unless you're in the financial industry, I would say most people they learned it, they forgot it. And I would say 80% of the people in the world don't watch the treasuries.
Well,
I don't know. I could be wrong.
Maybe we wish we didn't have to, eh?
Yep. Gotta watch the watchers.
Well, that's who was that, Plato, Jen? Who watched the watchers?
Oh, the cave, the Algar in the cave, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of watching the watchers, what do you think it's cost in this country, all this security? When I pick Andrew up on Wednesday morning, I go to Fort Nelstop, which is, a mile and a half from my house. I go by DePaul. We're talking 5:30 in the morning. There's 6 people standing on what street is it? That's the where the old basketball thing used to be. It's now the Student Union. Whatever that street is between Webster and Fulton. There's 6 people standing on that corner. What do they think is going to happen at 5:30 in the morning? The rats go by or what?
Are they worried about somebody coming to camp at
5:30 in the morning? You'd be surprised.
I never see anybody do. I mean, they thinking people are going to sneak in a bunch of tents or something and put them up?
Something. Criminals are just coming home then. You never know what you might want to do.
I don't think they're armed or anything. They're just standing there. I mean, So the reason why it got me on this is, you guys catch, I was doing more driving around yesterday maybe, but if you have a general aviation plane and you're coming to Chicago, meaning if you're, you know, it's you're not on a commercial flight, before you can land at Midway, you've got to land at Rockford or Gary so the TSA can check you out, and then you can come the rest of the way to Midway?
What?
Yeah. I never heard anything like that. You can't tell me.
What does that entail at Rockford, Gary? Are they strip searching you?
Cavity search? I mean, I hope not. Bend over. I have no idea. Are you going to search your plane? I mean, or they think it's explosive and you're going to run it into...
They're going to drive the jet into the United Center?
Well, it has happened. It just seemed kind of weird. What makes you think you can't stop some other place on the way to Midway and load up with explosives? I don't know.
That's very weird. That can't be everyone. They must be flagging a few.
I guarantee you some senator is coming in from Louisiana. He's not getting stopped in Gary. Maybe he is. Maybe he is.
There's not that much that could land there. I don't think you could put a regular jet out there.
I'm sure you can. Gary, I don't know if you put a 747.
Gary, yeah, Rockford, I don't know.
I think you could certainly put a 737 into Rockford, I think.
Well, maybe if somebody's living in Rockford, they could tell us.
Yeah. But I listened to that, I'm going...
Not in Lansing, maybe. Probably in Rockford.
But I guess, I did this maybe 10 years ago. Is there like a 250,000 people in this country that are in security or law enforcement? That's kind of a lot.
And we're still secure, Tom. You know?
Yeah,
the more people we hire, the less secure we get. It's just... Yeah. It's like the more diet drugs we have out there, the fatter we get. It's like, so Odd, what's your? I listened to Pritzker, and this is not a kind of a political statement, but Pritzker and the mayor last night, and I'll have to.
You're gonna get me upset before I've had my second cup.
No,
of
I'm saying they are very positive Chicago. Actually, you know, I think Pritzker, he doesn't need the money. Even though I'm not a massive fan of some of his policies, I think the guy's actually trying pretty hard, and he's in whatever. And I think he loves Chicago.
What's your point?
My point is, do they have an idea of how other people will never come into the town because they're absolutely convinced you can't walk down a block without... In other words, is there a perception...
I won't. I
understand that, but I'm saying you're not alone. A lot of people just get the feeling you can't come here between the traffic and the violence and everything else, and I guess my question, John, is do they understand how deep that feeling is?
No. They don't trust with it, Tom. They don't believe it. They're not touched by it.
Yeah, but I mean
they
somehow or another
why anybody else would be, so.
I don't know, maybe I'm jaundiced by I read a lot of stuff on Roosevelt. And the thing that I think set him apart from just about everybody is he made it his job, maybe because he was in a wheelchair, you know, most of his life. He made it his absolute, I won't say his job, but his mission is to get information from people outside of the normal White House stuff. I mean, it was the whole thing of, thing with Plug Henry, War and Remembrance, and Roots of, what was the first one? The Winds of War. And he sent his wife's girlfriend, for lack of a better term, all around the country, sending him letters that nobody else got to see of how bad things were in the country. He did everything he could to try and get other people's view from outside his normal chain of people telling him what he wanted to hear.
That's flown away of the passenger pigeon.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is that unique to him, or are other people, happy people? I mean, I don't know.
I think what they should do is take every senator and congressman who serves in Washington, D.C., and you have to live in your state. You can all, everybody get rid of your cushy offices and your private lifestyle. Live in your state. You can have your meetings, and you could meet once, maybe twice a month in Washington. Another thing, I put you on Zoom and phone calls and emails, and then you have to live where your constituents live. That's what I think. I bet that would change things when people could come and walk into your office and see you 4 days a week.
Remember when Jane Byrne moved into Cabrini Green?
Yes.
And they said to her, what's the first thing you do when you go into Cabrini Green? She goes, you look at the walls and see if something's crawling on them. Ugh.
By the way, did you see that her daughter just died the other day, Todd?
Oh, no, I didn't.
No.
Yeah, Kathy. She was only 66.
Wow.
Oh, my God, that's a shame.
Lung cancer sometimes.
Jane Byrne was a smoker, I think.
I think the kid was, too. She was a party animal, the kid.
Yeah.
That's very sad. I remember pictures of her with her daughter when the daughter was growing up.
Yeah,
it is sad. Janie was a tough bird, boy. I mean, she was a. I might not agree with her, but she didn't take guff from anybody, I don't think. So you think? What do you think? These rates are going to hang here, or what?
I think we're going to get a throw some. I think the Fed's going to throw some bone.
Yeah, it's going to affect the tenure,
yeah, I think
and it's going to affect.
Get a cut.
All right, that would help some. I mean, I would sure like to see. The people that are stuck with the 7.75 and eights to get down to 6.5, I think that would really help them. I think I'd like to see that happen. Plus, we'll get Nancy some business. She'd be doing it for
us. That's
them.
Right.
Jan, thank you as usual. SP Futures up 5. Nancy, now the big question, Odd, when are we ever going to see Jan? Well, he won't come to your place and he won't come to the city, so are you guys ever going to see each other?
I'm in the city, though. So, I don't have to go to it.
I'm saying you don't have to, you don't want to go to Orland.
I'll meet you guys, somewhere west.
Oh, God.
California.
Yeah.
Neutral territory.
Las Vegas. S&P Futures up 5, Nasdaq Futures up 15. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, you know the rest of it. I went to Washington. We won statehood. I became the first governor.
3 terms as governor, 2 terms in the Senate, ambassador to the court of St. James, back again to the Senate, and a man who, with a snap of his fingers, could be the next vice president of the United States.
You're not going to use the story, Mr. Scott?
No, sir. This is the West, sir. When the legend becomes fact, print the legend.